Hello and welcome to the MeasurePod, episode number 42. This is a place for people in the analytics world to talk about all things data and analytics, especially Google Analytics. I'm Dara, MD at MeasureLab.
And I'm Dan. I'm an analytics consultant and trainer, also at MeasureLab. So Dara, we talked about it a bit last week when we were chatting with Ed, but actually what we're going to be talking about today is the most recent or biggest update to Google Analytics 4, well, probably thus far. And this is the rollout of behavior modeling using consent mode. And we gave a little sneak peek last week what it was about, but we need to give it a bit more time and attention to actually explore what this feature is, how it works, and more importantly, what it means for us and everyone else using GA4.
Yeah, definitely a big piece of news. And this is us following up on our promise. We committed to deep diving this. So this is exactly what we're going to do this week. We're going to talk about what it means and what we think of it and just see where we go with it, really. So let's start at the top. Let's just recap what the update is.
Yeah, for sure. And just as a heads up to anyone listening, this is going to be quite a link heavy episode. And we're going to be putting a bunch of links in the show notes for a load of resources, guides, tips, and sort of putting you in the right place. So in your app, if you have a look in the show notes there, or just click the link to our website and all of the links and the details will be alongside the transcript there. So the news, Dara, so this was announced on the 2nd of June. So as of the recording, it's about 2 weeks ago, but what they introduced is what they call behavior modeling for consent mode. What this means is it's the, in a sense, one of the final pieces of the machine learning puzzle that they've been promising for GA4 for some time. So a couple of the other models they're already using, so data-driven attribution, their predictive modeling to do things like anomaly detections and the predictive conversions and churners audiences that they can do for the e-com data. They're doing the conversion modeling. So that's something that they introduced a couple of months back. But finally, what they're looking at now is behavior modeling. So what this affects is all data, basically. So it's not a small rollout what they've done. It uses a feature called consent mode, which we'll talk about in a moment. But basically what it does is it understands that there's going to be missing data for users that don't consent to be tracked, right? So on websites and apps, you need to give consent to be using things like Google Analytics and Google Analytics 4. So what this behavior modeling does is it uses clever, very clever models to fill in those gaps, to estimate the actual total number of users and page views and sessions that you would have tracked if you didn't need consent.
So on the surface, a really great bit of news. It's making all the numbers more accurate, filling in all the blanks. Everybody can have complete trust in what analytics tells them now.
Yeah, on the surface, it does. It feels like a really positive view, but then maybe it's the cynic in me thinking about it. But then I think about why? What's the point? What's the angle? Why is Google doing this? Why is Google, for a free version of a product? So let's not forget that we're using a free version here and we're getting access to all of these machine learning models that is on the surface there to help us have some good reports. And it doesn't seem to help Google in any way, other than the fact that we would want to keep using Google and hopefully spend money through their other platforms. So I think this is something that ultimately, one of the reasons probably why they're deprecating Universal Analytics, and this is something, the way they explain this is that they have quote unquote solved this problem with GA4. There's an issue that third-party cookies, some issues of first-party cookies and consent throw into the mix, which makes tracking in the traditional context very difficult and impossible to, I suppose, from their perspective, make money on. So what we're looking at here is a way for Google to use estimations, very clever estimations, black box models. You know, we don't know how they work. So we've got a level of faith that we're putting into Google here to do the right thing and to model it correctly, effectively. But ultimately, what we're looking at is a way for Google to continue reporting in Google Analytics at the same level than kind of like pre-cookie banner era. And actually, that all comes down to this new feature, which they've rolled out across GTAG and Google Tag Manager. So we'll probably be talking about Tag Manager mostly, but this is something called consent mode. And consent mode has been around for a little while now, but ultimately if you're not using consent mode in the implementation, you're probably not going to have access to this new feature, whether you like it or not, whether you're for it or against it.
Do you want to tell us a bit more about what consent mode is?
Yeah, cool. So consent mode is a way of managing consent within the Google and non-Google tag ecosystem. So most people by now will have some kind of like consent mechanism or consent management platform, so CMP for short, on their websites and apps. And that's all well and good, but actually that doesn't do what I call the plumbing. It doesn't plumb into things like Google Tag Manager very well, definitely not automatically. What consent mode is that plumbing, is the glue between your consent management platform, so what levels of consent and what things the users have consented to, and then the actual application of the tags, the implementation. So what it isn't Google CMP. It isn't a way to collect consent using a Google technology. What it's saying is that, okay, well, let's manage all of my tags based on certain levels of consent. So what you can do in Tag Manager quite simply is you can just roll out and say, if someone's opted into analytics tracking, then deploy all these tags. If they haven't opted into this tracking, then don't fire these tags. So it's really quite a clever kind of like trigger system or trigger grouping system that's just a bit more easy to manage and streamlined. However, there is one benefit from the Google tags. So if you've opted into analytics tracking, great, you can do the regular GA tracking. If you've opted into advertising tracking, then great, you've opted into things like Google Signals and some of the additional things that Google Analytics can do. But if you haven't accepted analytics tracking or ads tracking, what happens is Google Analytics can do something new. And what it does is it sends what it calls is a cookieless ping. So it doesn't have access to the cookies and it doesn't contain the user ID or the client ID and it doesn't contain a session ID, but it still sends that piece of data, that event, that page view, that click event or whatever you're tracking, it still sends that into the Google Analytics servers. So in a sense, now in the backend system within Google Analytics 4, you have two types of data. You've got consented data and unconsented data. So the consented data have the user ID and the session ID and you can tie all the things together and do attribution modeling and you can do your kind of total session reporting and user reporting, all the fun stuff that we're used to. But now we've got a bunch of data that's, each one is completely different, right? We don't know who and what session has triggered each of these events. So that's the kind of pool of data that now Google Analytics 4 is using to do the modeling, to do this behavior modeling. By the way, this data, whether it's consented or not, is exported to BigQuery. So if you've got the BigQuery export, you can actually do your own behavior modeling if you're really keen as well. So what consent mode is, just to recap, because I know I've talked a lot, but what consent mode is a way to manage consent levels within something like Google Tag Manager so that you can fire tags conditionally based on what consent you've got from your users. But there's one small caveat there that the Google tags have a very special bonus case that they have this whole cookieless ping, cookieless tracking activity if you don't opt in. And again, without doing this, you won't have that set of data to do the modeling. So that's really the kind of nuts and bolts of how this behavior modeling works is you have to do this consent mode and you have to be collecting these cookieless pings so that these models can start training.
So it's interesting. It's called behavioral modeling. It's relying on consent mode, but it doesn't affect the existing conversion and attribution modeling that they have in GA4. Why does the conversion modeling not need to use consent mode, but this new behavioral modeling does? Do we know how those two sets of model data work together? So if this is trying to plug some of the gaps on users and maybe user-based metrics, how does that then fit in with the conversion modeling that it's using?
It's a really interesting question. I don't know if we're ever going to get an explicit answer. Definitely not from Google. I think if the rest of us are just going to be guessing, maybe some educated guessing going on, but it's still a guess. From what I understand, the only way that you'd be able to use this kind of modeling within attribution modeling is if you're fingerprinting. If you're fingerprinting user behavior and you're somehow stitching unconsented data back into users. So you have a user journey to do things like attribution modeling. Google have come down very, very heavily on the kind of, we will never do fingerprinting. We're never going to ever do fingerprinting in any of our technology. So what this modeling is doing is looking at aggregates. So it's going to be like total users will be modeled up to be the kind of blended total users, but it's not going to blend down or it's not going to model down to the individual users. So that's why things like attribution modeling won't actually be affected by this. And I would imagine things like conversion modeling also, again, because it uses that same kind of data. So that's my interpretation of why things like conversion modeling and attribution modeling, data-driven attribution, won't be affected by this behavior modeling. Because they're actually not stitching together or fingerprinting user journeys. What they're doing is just taking a total number per day, which is total users or sessions or page views or by whatever dimension you've got, and they're modeling that number, not the underlying data.
But is the total number of conversions and conversion rate metrics, do we know yet if they're going to be modeled based on the behavioral modeling, or are they going to be using something else?
No, they are. Everything like that. So conversions, purchases, revenue, sessions, users, they're all going to be modeled. But as of the modeling effective date, so in some cases, we've seen that as the 15th of May, some of the times the 10th of May, but it seems to be around sort of middle of May. From our experience, it could be different for you. But as of that date, analytics is estimating all possible data that's missing due to factors like cookie consent. And I'm quoting directly from their webpage there. So what they're saying is they're going to be modeling every single piece of data that they can find. And what I've done is I've pulled obviously I'm not going to tell you who it is, but I've pulled a couple of sets of data from some of our clients that are using this already that have been seeing the effect of modeled data using things like consent mode, comparing that to the observed data, the real data, the consented data. And what we've found is that, yes, things like users and sessions have been modeled, and we'll go through some of the numbers we've found in a moment. But just for the sake of it, I just wanted to pull a couple of other stats. I pulled out page views. So that's the count of the page underscore view event. Purchases. So this is an e-commerce website, and revenue. All five of those numbers, users, sessions, page views, revenue, and transactions, all five of those have been modeled using this behavior modeling. So for this one client, I've pulled the last 28 days of data up to yesterday's date. And just to give you some context, I won't give you the actual numbers, but we've seen a 25% increase in the total count of users. So 25% of those users have been modeled. So it's gone up 25%. Sessions has gone up 24%. Page views has gone up 16%. Purchases has gone up 8.5%. And revenue has gone up 9%. So it looks like less severe of an increase using the modeled data than the observed data as you go down into the kind of purchase and revenue line. But one would imagine that if you're looking to purchase through this website, you're more likely to have consented for tracking, right? I think that's the idea at least. But yeah, so we're seeing everything from 25% difference in sessions and users down to sort of 8, 9, 10, 16% difference to page views, purchases, and revenue. So yeah, quite a big difference. Again, this is just the one sample that we've pulled just for the sake of having this conversation, but already feels quite a substantial proportion of their traffic.
It is. And going back to what I said at the beginning, and even though I said it in a kind of half jokey way, but on the surface, this seems like a good thing because it's not inflating the count. It's trying its best to close that gap that has been caused by users who obviously don't consent and are using privacy blockers or whatever. So this is Google's way of putting all their might behind trying to say, we want to give you a better view of those numbers, bearing in mind some of these people aren't going to consent. So I'm seeing it as a good thing, even though we don't know how it works. But, you know, with the Google brains on this, you'd have to think their modeling is certainly better than most companies could do on their own.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to disagree. I think they've got the might and the power and the time behind them to be able to kind of perfect these models, or at least make them as accurate as possible. I think, like anything, I think I'm always going to be the glass half empty or the cynic on this, just because it's like, if I don't know exactly how it works, how would I ever know that I can trust it? Or how do I know how I can use it if it's doing something that I have no idea? But I think this is something we were chatting about actually about off mic the other day, which is like, actually, is this any different to what we had in Universal? So take Universal Analytics sampling, for example. If you run a report in Universal Analytics, and it turns out that they had a 10% sampling in the report, would you go out of your way to kind of force kind of unsampled report? Or would you go, actually, for just looking at trends or looking at what I'm looking at, that's fine. I'll take that on the chin and I'm going to use the data in the same way I would have done, even if I knew it was exact data. But then I suppose pose that question to you, Darry, if that was 10%, but then what if that was 25%? Or what if in some cases that's more? What if that's 50%? So in a sense, the sampling and this kind of behavior modeling kind of works in a similar way, where it takes a partial set of the data and models up the difference. So in my head, it kind of works in a similar context. Obviously, different approach and different data sets behind it. I suppose that's the way to think about this, is like, what level would you be comfortable with? What's that tipping point where it becomes maybe a positive to see what they're doing, to becomes, I can't use this data, even if it's got good intentions?
Maybe I'm not thinking this through enough, but I'm thinking it's different, even though I get the analogy with sampling. But with sampling, it was taking a subset of the actual data to speed up the reporting, the processing, and it was modeling based on that. But some of the metrics, presumably, like session-based metrics, if we're allowed to still talk about sessions, but the session-based metrics and the event data, that is an accurate count, isn't it? It has the cookie-less pings. It's not having to guess what those actual numbers were. It would know what they are.
Well, you're right with the event data, but not the session. I think the session falls under the same umbrella as the user data.
Because it doesn't have a session ID.
Yeah, exactly. So the session ID and the user ID is not provided. That's the kind of the principles of those cookie-less pings. So anything at a raw kind of like data level. And I think that's why you get access to these in BigQuery, to be honest. That's why they feed them through into the BigQuery export. So there is a sense that you're quite right. I haven't validated this data set I've pulled out to know, for example, the purchases and the revenue should be exact, right? Because we have the purchases and the revenue event data. They just have cookie-less pings. But I don't need to know the session and I don't need to know the user to get the totals of those. So what I could do is use the BigQuery export to kind of validate that side of it. Obviously, there's always going to be a level of like missing data in GA. It's all kind of, you know, web-based and there's issues inherently with that, but I think we can all accept. But actually, that's a really interesting point. I've not thought about, are they modeling the event level data because the numbers have gone up. We saw 8.5% and 9% difference for purchases and revenue for this econ website. But is that different again to what they have in the BigQuery Expo? I don't know. So I need to kind of take that away and maybe update on a later episode of just what that difference is.
Yeah, see, that's surprising, isn't it? The purchases is different because you would think that they would, if they have a count of something, they'd use it. And then they'd only use the model data to fill in the blanks or to tie it back to a number of users.
Yeah, and this is really interesting, actually, the way they word it. And I think this is what's going to, I mean, if it's throwing us, I think it's going to be throwing other people too, right? And this is that along with this rollout of behavior modeling using consent mode, they've also updated a feature in Google Analytics 4, which is called the reporting identity. So in the GA4 property settings, one of the sections is called reporting identity. And unlike Universal Analytics, where it just used the cookie ID, there was some half-assed approach to using user ID features as well, which never truly worked the way we wanted them to. But the reality is Google Analytics 4 has a fresh approach to it, and it uses like a hierarchical approach to user identification. So if it's got a user ID, it will use that. If not, it defaults to a cookie ID. But if only it was that simple. There's now multiple different types of identity you can use within GA4. And the default actually has 4 different layers of user identification. So at the very top, if you provide a user ID, it will take that as the source of truth, the kind of the golden number, the golden user ID. We won't kind of question you about it. If there's no user ID, it then uses Google Signals. So Google Signals is Google's sort of user graph that it identifies across people logged in across multiple different Google accounts. If that's not there, it will use the device ID. So now we're back into cookies, right? So third layer down, we're using the cookies. And then there's a fourth layer beyond cookies. So where there's no cookie, it then uses the model data. So now we've got this sort of ecosystem of identification. Some of it we don't have access to, like the Google Signals data, but the rest of it we do, like user ID, device ID, and the modeling is the new feature they've just rolled out. I think where I'm going with this is that the default is what's called blended as a reporting identity, which uses all 4. You have the choice of turning them off. So you can say, don't use model data, just use observed data, in which case then it will use all of them but the model data. And there is a secret third option, which is tucked away under the show all button, which is then device-based only. So you can, if you want, go back into just using cookies, just like Universal Analytics did. So if you wanted to do a side-by-side comparison, you can. Probably one of the best things about this feature, so there's a lot of questions I have around it, but one of the best things is that this isn't a permanent change. So you can change this setting, click refresh in your report, and it will just re-aggregate the data based on the new identity. So you don't have to worry about changing this and then affecting data going sort of historically or going into the future. So that's actually how I pulled that data, is I used the blended data using the model, using the signals and using everything else. And then I turned that off and just looked at the observed data and then just refreshed the report. I just clicked refresh in the browser and pulled out the new numbers. So I think that for me is a really useful part of all this, that you don't have to use this data. The issue, and I think this is something you raised to me, Dara, the other day, which is that when you go into any sort of standard report now in the reports workspace in GA4, you get where the sampling indicator used to be in Universal Analytics, you'll get a very similar indicator in any report that you happen to go in. And just as a heads up, there is no sampling in GA4. So the reports workspace, there is no sampling. So I don't know why, but it actually tells you this is an unsampled report. There is 100% of available data, but it will also now tell you if you're using modeled data. So there's a secondary part to that that says this is using modeled data to account for things like missing cookies or not complying. But the issue for me is that it doesn't tell you the percentage. So going back to my analogy of Universal Analytics, having sampling and this being kind of analogous to that, in Universal Analytics, you could see quite easily, okay, we're using 20% real data, 80% is sampled. Whereas now, we just know that some is modeled, but we don't know how much unless we do go through the motions like what I just said of change the identity, refresh the report, change it back and see what the difference is. It feels quite long-winded. It feels like they could surface that because they do know. I feel like it's just something they are deliberately decided not to show.
It'll be interesting to see. It could be that it does roll out, but at least in the meantime, even though it is a pain, at least you can do it in the way that you've done, where you can switch between them and then export the data and compare. And I just wanted to say as well, I feel like I'm in a very favorable mood today to Google. I seem to be playing the opposite to your cynic, but the flexibility it offers, it's not bad, is it, in terms of those reporting identities? Because if you, for some reason, want to stick with good old-fashioned device ID and just rely on cookies, you can do that, but you can also go for all the observed options if you have user ID, if you have signals, or you can then choose to go the whole hog and have blended and include the model data. So you get kind of like multiple choices. Do you want model data or not? And then do you want to have the signals, user graph data, and the user ID options as well? So you've got a fair bit of control there in terms of what you can and can't do. And the other benefit is you can switch between them. Maybe the reason I'm feeling so positive is I'm just comparing this to some of the more rigid features in Universal. And the fact that you can actually choose something now just seems like a step forward.
For sure. And the whole it backdates, which is something that Universal Analytics, I think, never had. If I had to pick a hole in this, and that would be the fact, not to do the kind of model data, which is kind of the focus of this conversation, but as a slight side point, is the Google Signals aspect of this. Because there is no option, which I would love to see, which is using the device ID and user ID only. So there's no way to use your IDs and the cookie IDs without putting Signals in the middle. There's lots of issues with Signals. I think we can have another conversation entirely around what Google Signals is and some of the issues and the kind of challenges we found with it. But that's a whole concept of thresholding. So thresholding comes in quite quickly when you're using Google Signals as a reporting identity. So there's layers. There's layers here, right? We're talking about one of the four layers, you know, that we could have many conversations around user ID, what cookies mean in the context of today's landscape, modeling, and also Google Signals. But for me, it's like, you blend them all together and it becomes so complicated. You know, even the best intentioned people, specialists in this, will struggle to keep up and understand what is a user in GA4 anymore, because we don't know. It could be one of many things. Some of it is hidden from us. We don't know what Google Signals is and how it's working and how it's joining users. That isn't exported to BigQuery, by the way. It's not exported anywhere else. So again, validating between the UI and BigQuery is now never going to match, but how much is enough for us to be confident with it? I don't know. So there's lots of ambiguity, I think, that things like behavior modeling, this kind of machine learning modeling throws up on top of all the other ambiguity that GA4 had that Universal Analytics didn't. So I'm not saying that GA4 is better or worse, and I'm not saying that it's because of GA4. It's actually just a symptom of the times, you know, consent management, cookie deprecation of third-party cookies, first-party cookies being sort of ring-fenced into sort of 1 week or 24 hours. I think there's just a natural evolution of what we used Universal Analytics for. I think GA4 is a good as any replacement for that. And maybe I need some positivity from you, Darren, on this. But I think maybe this is in some way deliberate, maybe from Google, to complicate things and to make things a bit harder to unpick, maybe. So that, again, all of this data is being curated by Google. You know, it's not just a data aggregator and processor anymore. This is a curator. It's creating the numbers, even if they didn't exist, which, again, is great on paper because it's helping us work around a lot of these sort of issues that we're coming up against nowadays. But again, I have to go back to one of the first things I said. It's like, what's the point? What's in it for Google? Why is Google providing this as part of a free service? And that's the thing that I still kind of come back to.
It's got to be the obvious, isn't it? It's the same reason that they've always done it, to keep people in their ecosphere and get people to spend more money on their media. So something I was surprised about yesterday when we were talking about this in prep for the podcast, Dan, was the fact that the default for these reporting identities has actually changed as a result of these. Well, I guess as a result of the introduction of this behavioral modeling with consent mode.
Yes, the default now is blended, which uses that four reporting identity hierarchy. You can, again, change that without affecting the data too much historically or going forward. So you have the choice, but the default's changed. Much like when they rolled out data-driven attribution, they just rolled it out as the default, switched everyone over. I think in a sense, maybe they can get away with it because you can just change it back. But again, who does that? We've been working in this space long enough, Dara, to know who changes the session timeout or campaign timeout in UA or the engagement timer in GA4. Just people just don't bother, really. So I think it's quite sneaky of Google doing this. So the default is blended. So the next time you go into GA4, it is worth checking to see what that reporting identity is so that you are aware of what you're looking at.
And this is potentially a biggie because, just to be clear, so the difference with this change now is it's forced the introduction of the model data to everybody. So your numbers will change from when this change kicked in. And I think I'm right in saying that this is maybe rolling out on a timeline, so it'll be available in different properties at different times. And you need to meet the prerequisites as well, which maybe we'll come on to next. But if this is available in your property, then you're suddenly going to see more users from the day this change kicked in. Again, going back to saying that this is not necessarily a bad thing, but the fact that people might not know about it is worth calling out, because we might have a lot of companies saying, brilliant, we've got loads of new users today. We must be doing something right. What campaign did we launch that's driven this increase in traffic to the site? And actually, it's just the kind of sneaky introduction of this model data behind the scenes.
I think that's my reticence for this. And it's not the fact that it's an impressive feat of engineering or anything like that. I think it's more the fact that they are changing the default. And I don't think people are well versed or educated or aware enough of what that means fully. I mean, we're struggling with this and this is our day job. So I think the reality is when it comes to any change like this. Yes, it's great. They can put a banner in GA at the top with a ribbon that says this is now happening. But again, we're the minority, really. You're logging into GA4 and going to get the numbers. A lot of people will be sitting in getting the data from a warehouse or pulling it into Data Studio or Tableau using the API. So I think this is the key thing. And the reality is the kind of days of validating data is kind of, I think, finally ended with this. Yes, I can validate revenue. That's one number. But I can't validate users, right? That's the whole point, is I can't check the baseline to see if this is accurate or not. So I think with all this, with the kind of the post-validation era and all that stuff, I feel and I think I can see an uptake from this account that I'm looking at. It was introduced on the 15th. I can see a definite uptick in total users on the 15th. But the reality is that could be fluctuations, that could be seasonality, that could be 100 other factors. But again, I've got no way of validating this. If during this rollout specifically, but when you're doing year on year, or if you're doing your month on month, even over this period of time, you're going to see a jump because, you know, in the introduction of this model data has been introduced on a date. It hasn't backdated and rolled back over time. It is introduced on a date. So there's definitely an onboarding period with this kind of stuff as well. And again, the less we know about it, the more you feel like, oh, something interesting has happened. It has, but it's not in your performance or marketing or the website or the apps. This is a modeling thing. This is a back-end thing for Google. So I think, again, that's my reticence around this feature, not because of what it is necessarily. I think it's just the approach to rolling this out. And they are very aware that it's very confusing and complicated, and a lot of people won't realize this is happening. I feel like they're even banking on that.
I can't help but think, and this is probably me just oversimplifying as I tend to do, but I can't help but think that this is fighting a bit of a losing battle, that we should give up on trying to estimate or model what we don't know and almost split analytics into the kind of observed data, even if it's with cookieless pings. In other words, maybe know for certain you have X number of users because they've identified themselves and you have the full end-to-end journey for those users. And then you have this separate category of data, which is the anonymous users, and that's accurate to an event level and maybe to a session level, but at the user level, you just don't bother.
I'm with you. Just because, again, what's the point if it's never going to be 100%? I play devil's advocate and say, what about my year-on-year reporting, Dara? What about that? How would that look if the numbers go down? Yeah, just don't do it. I mean, that's easy enough for us to say, right? Just don't do year-on-year reporting. Don't compare to a previous time.
But can you anyway, with all of the changes that are happening, is it fighting a losing battle trying to compare year-on-year, unless you did it in the way that I'm suggesting, which is you kind of break it down into what you know and what you don't know, and you only compare on a more granular level. So you compare conversions, but you don't compare users.
Yeah, it is a losing battle, for sure. But then this is the thing that I've always struggled with. And I think eventually you just kind of cave and do it. But it's like, when you come to compare any period on period, you have to be aware that the circumstances of the previous period is not identical to the current circumstances, whether that's law, whether that's the rollout of GDPR or any other privacy update or adjustment, local, national, international, whether that's technological, whether the latest version of Safari rolled out with a different approach to collection and cookies and whatever than the previous version, or even whether it's your website. But this is something we've always found, which is websites hopefully become better and more efficient. They evolve and change. So the function and what people do there and how they use them changes. So the reality is you take a point in time, any point you like, and then you compare it to right now, everything's different. But I feel very little value in comparing what was to what is now, because it won't help you with what is next necessarily. We can infer some trends and some changes, but it's so difficult to know what you're seeing isn't because of, you know, Chrome's latest update. Introducing the cookie banner, this is the biggest one we've seen so far, which is fundamentally all of a sudden you're saying no to collecting a bunch of data that you might have done beforehand. So yeah, you're right. I think it's a losing battle. It's an uphill race. It's never going to be there, but it won't stop people doing it. And I don't think that's because they don't care. I think it's actually because they don't know. And I think this is the hardest thing. It's almost on, you know, and maybe everyone listening can relate to this, but it's almost like on us to explain that.
Just as a, well, last point from me, at least, just to kind of wrap up, I did mention the prerequisites a minute ago. So this isn't going to be available for everyone. That's the reality of it. So first and foremost, you need consent mode turned on, which is something that's available to everyone. That's an easy tick in the box. But you need to have 1,000 daily, and tell me if I'm wrong here, you need 1,000 daily events for at least 7 days where they've denied consent. And you need at least 1,000 daily events for 7 days where they've granted consent for this modeling to actually work. And I think I read that even if you have that, there's still no guarantee that the model is going to be trainable in your particular case. So this isn't going to be a feature that's available for every website.
No, you're quite right. You need 1,000 consents and 1,000 unconsents per day for an extended period of time so that it can start modeling the difference. You need a period of time where that's consistently true so that it can start modeling. And if you've got a 90% opt-out rate, then you're probably never going to have this modeling feature turned on. It's never going to be modeled sufficiently enough to be surfaced to you.
Famous last words might be a topic we come back to with an updated point of view once this has been out in the wild for a bit longer. Okay, switching gears. It's becoming my trademark line saying, apart from worrying about these GA4 features, what have you been doing to wind down?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, maybe even months ago now, I might have mentioned on one of these wind downs that I helped out in a very small way, contribute and build a indoor skate park locally to me. And it's finally open. So yesterday, as of the time of recording, yesterday was the opening night. And I went down and had a skate and it was really good fun. And I'm really looking forward to spending a bit more time down there and skating something new, something different, something big. It's really big, which is awesome. A different type of skating altogether. So yeah, new skate park, a friend of mine opened it up and just going to enjoy skating something new.
You've got the scratches to prove it. Obviously, our listeners can't see this, but we're on video and you've got some scratches, war wounds on your elbows.
Yeah, as much as I try, I don't end up standing on top of my skateboard as much as I'd like. So yeah, it doesn't feel like summer unless I have something hurting. You know, it's very much ever since I started skating, it's almost like a badge of honor a little bit. You've got to have some wound that you're nursing. But yeah, looking forward to skating there more. It was only a quick session yesterday, so we'll go back later in the week and see how many more scrapes and bruises I get. Anyway, Dara, how about you? What have you been doing to wind down and escape from consent management and consent mode and other GA4 features?
I feel like more often than not, I talk about a film I've seen, which is what I'm going to do now. But I'm going to just state, I do also get outside. So I've been doing all my usual dog walking, running out and enjoying the sunshine. But we did also go and see Top Gun Maverick a couple of weeks ago, which was great. It was better even. I thought I'd enjoy it as almost like a bit of a guilty pleasure. But it was actually really, really good. So I would recommend it to anyone if you haven't already seen it. And I wouldn't even say you necessarily need to have seen the original film. It would help, but it's not essential. So yeah, really good. All right. Where can people find out more about you, Dan, apart from like the skate parks in Lewis? How can people find out a bit more about you?
So LinkedIn, I searched my name, Daniel Perry Reed. And there is also my website, danalytics.co.uk.
And for me, it's on LinkedIn if you want to reach out to me. Okay, that's it from us for this week. To hear more from me and Dan and around all things GA4 and analytics related, all of our previous episodes are in the archive at measurelab.co.uk/podcast, or you can obviously find them all in the app that you're using to listen to this.
And if you want to suggest a topic or ask us any question around consent mode, behavior modeling, or any of the other fun stuff we mentioned today, there is a form, another link in the show notes, but we've got a Google form in there that you could submit and get through to us that way. Or you can just email podcast@measurelab.co.uk and me and Dara are on the other side of that.
Our theme music is from Confidential. You can find links to their Spotify and Instagram in our show notes. I've been Dara, joined by Dan. So on behalf of both of us, thanks for listening. See you next time.
Sorry, we both stopped there. Yeah, cut that.